Welcome back to the McAdoo Studios. Kyle Bailey, Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, TechSideline.com. Follow them on Twitter at Will Stewart, TSL, and at Chris Coleman, TSL. Who wants to talk Deflategate? Nobody? Me neither.
No,
me neither.
Hey, if you follow me on Twitter, I think my last tweet on my personal account was a, did you see that video of that, of those, I don't even, those, I guess they're sisters, like a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old playing Enter Sandman.
Oh, wait. The girls?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome video.
Yeah, it's like 7.7 million views.
Yeah,
of
I saw it the other day.
And the lead singer does a lead guitar. She's pretty good. The drummer's awesome.
Yeah.
And then the bass player is the 9-year-old. She's still figuring out the whole stage presence thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you go to at Will Stewart TSL, it's like it maybe three tweets deep at the most. It's really cool.
What? Yeah, by the way, I got a follow on Twitter from Tech's new associate AD for strategic communications.
Pete Morris.
Same here.
He tweeted it out, right? I'm pretty sure.
He probably has it.
I got
he tweets a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Thanks for the follow, Pete. Appreciate that, by the way. I think he tweeted it out. And I'd seen it. Like it's been out a couple of years, right? Or not too long, but it's been out for a while.
Long enough. Well, 7.7 million views. It's been out a while.
Yeah, so I remember seeing it back in the day, but I don't think I ever watched it. I watched it like 20 seconds in. I was like, oh, there's a couple of talented girls playing a song. I don't really have time to listen to the whole thing, but I get the gist. And then when Pete tweeted it out the other day, I actually watched the whole thing. I was like, damn, that's good. It's really good.
The girl on the drums can rock. And then that wandered me down another path where I saw a 6-year-old playing Enter Sandman, playing the drums. So the music was overlaid, and he was playing the drums. And the kid's like 8 or 9 now, but he's an excellent drummer. And that's what YouTube is. It's a time suck.
If we can't get Metallica here for the Ohio State game,
What I was going to say. What do you think the odds are those three little girls are playing a live rendition of that song in Lane Stadium? Maybe they're not playing the entrance, but maybe outside the stadium,
right?
Possibly.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Because we
at the Hokie Village.
Well, yeah. There've been at least two or three live bands on campus for every home game in the past year or so.
Yes, that's right.
One out there near the entrance between the south end zone and the west stands, and the one up there near the student activities building.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. So. Yeah, I think that's possible. We could probably find a spot for him.
Just less Jimmy Buffett. That's all I ask for. Just a lot less Jimmy Buffett. I heard enough Jimmy Buffett last year.
Yeah.
Will looks like. Are you a Buffett fan?
I've got his greatest hits. I'm that guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you listen to Margaritaville and then like one other one, then you just take it out.
Well, because of my advanced age, I listen to A Pirate Looks at 40 and He Went to Paris and all that kind
of
stuff.
I've never heard of those songs, I don't think.
Then I do listen to Cheeseburger in Paradise.
I just don't like Buffett. Okay, we're going to get on a tangent here. Right. He's not musically talented. Anyway, he's a rich, rich man, so good for him. So Will looks at us during the break and he goes, let's talk about how Virginia Tech is going to beat Ohio State.
No, I didn't phrase it that way.
First of all, let me back up. Will didn't say that Virginia Tech is going to beat Ohio State. How they would go about doing it is how you characterized it. So I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What did you have in mind?
Well, if you look at last year's game, Virginia Tech had so many advantages for last year's game. And I actually had a guy email me last summer and say, hey, I think Virginia Tech can beat Ohio State, and here's how it's going to happen. And he laid out how Ohio State had to play Navy in the first week, so they got to prepare for that triple option thing and really work to beat Navy. And sure enough, that's how it unfolded. Ohio State had to put them away in the fourth quarter. Meanwhile, Virginia Tech's playing William & Mary, doesn't really have to show anything on offense. So this guy was contending, and I agreed with him that, you know, if you look at the Logan Thomas offense Virginia Tech ran in 2013, what they ran in 2014 was totally different, and there was no film of it. There was just the William & Mary game where Tech didn't really show all that much. So going into that game, Tech's offense was an unknown. And sure enough, as you know, they got great performances up and down the offense that they pretty much didn't get the rest of the year.
Right.
Certainly not for an entire game. Defensively, Bud threw something at them they'd never seen before. So they had those two advantages from their own side. And from the other side, Ohio State was starting JT Barrett.
Right.
And had a young offensive line that Virginia Tech took advantage of that later on was excellent in the stretch run. So all these things. And frankly, Ohio State didn't make any plays that night. You know, and so all this stuff coalesced together. So you find yourself thinking, where can we find that sort of stuff this fall? And there's really not a lot there because there's a lot of film on Tech's offense now. Bud's already pulled one huge rabbit out of the hat defensively. What's he going to do this fall to kind of shake Ohio State up? The only thing I can think of that they can throw at Ohio State that Ohio State won't be ready for and hasn't seen, and we may have even talked about this on the air before, is something with Brendan Motley.
Right.
Or Dwayne Lawson, if that's your guy. I would want it more to be Motley. I'd bring Motley in a little bit, have him run some read option, have Ohio State thinking, yeah, that's their running quarterback, change of pace guy, and then have him start chucking it a little bit.
I like that. The other question that I have about the game is, I think we might have talked about this before, but I know people have asked me is, you know, what do you think Bud's going to have in his bag of tricks? You know, what's the game plan going to be? You think he comes back with the same defense as last year? No.
No way.
No
chance.
Do you know Bud Foster? No, that's not happening. You know, and not only that, it wouldn't – first of all, I mean, they've – teams after Virginia Tech maybe didn't have time to implement that, you know, or to install it to the same degree.
Right.
But they took cues from that, you know, and so Ohio State saw variations of that throughout the rest of the season.
And figured it out. And they steamrolled it.
You know, so – you know, Bud Foster is not arrogant enough to believe, well, we do it better than everyone else, so we're going to do it again because we stifled them last year. No, they're not going to do that. There will be different looks. Now, there are only so many different ways you can line up.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, there's only so many different things legally that Bud can do, you know, to make it look different out there. But it's not going to be the same game plans. But I want to know. Like, Bud was sitting here, and like, I had him on the air one day. And I was like, I wanted to be like, what are you going to do? Tell us right now, what are you going to do to Ohio State?
Yeah.
You know, and then he would have gotten angry, so I couldn't do that. You know, I what do you guys think? What's he going to do?
That's a good question. He might not know until their quarterback situation clears up.
You think it matters that much?
I think it does. I think Cardell's different than the rest. He can run, but he's not.
He's a straight ahead downhill.
Straight
runner.
Ahead, exactly, yeah. Exactly. With a much bigger arm,
right?
Yeah, he's a guy. He's just different. He will challenge you more vertically down the field than Barrett did.
Yeah.
So, I think you probably have to play him a little bit differently. I don't know exactly what they'll do. If I knew what Bud Foster was going to do, I would be a highly paid offensive coordinator somewhere right now, I think.
Right.
But I think they mix up their coverages more this year. Jones is still good. He's going to be making his fourth career start. And it's going to be his first true road game.
If he starts. Right, that's the thing.
If he starts. You know? Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I know I've talked about this a lot on this show, but people do still forget, you know, JT Barrett set the Big Ten scoring record last year before he got hurt. He was really, really good.
Yep.
Really good. And he knows the offense a lot. Mm-hmm. Really well. And so I'm talking to, I think I'm talking to Bitter the other day, you know, and he says, look, Jones won a national championship. He won the Big Ten championship. You know, I think he won a semifinal game. Like, He literally in three games as a starter conquered everything there is to conquer in college football in terms of winning. So how does he approach the game mentally? You know, he wasn't the one that was beaten in Ohio State, you know, specifically him last year. You know, and he's already been to the top of the mountain. So what's his mind state? When he gets to Blacksburg, if he's the starter?
Mm-hmm.
I think in a lot of ways, Cardale Jones is the better matchup for Bud Foster's group. I really do think that. I've always thought that.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right about that. Just for the simple fact that he's still the inexperienced guy.
Right.
And he might be a little bit overconfident. You never know. The thing nobody's talking about, to me, I don't care who plays quarterback for. I really don't care.
Yeah.
How are we going to stop Zeke Elliott?
Zeke Elliott, yep.
Yeah, they barely ran him at all.
Like, you know what? Like seven carries against us or something?
He can't show his midriff anymore, so he's got to get used to that now. And he's not happy about it.
Was there a new rule?
Yeah. Man. You didn't see the NCAA rules committee? The players can't tuck their jerseys underneath the shoulder pads anymore. Because Zeke Elliott, you know, when he played, he showed the six-pack when he was running. He can't do that anymore.
Because nobody can grab that if they're, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Yeah.
It might not be a big thing, obviously, but he was ticked about it. Like, they got quotes from him and everything. He was really angry about that. So he can't show. He's got to play with a regular jersey like everybody else now.
Yep.
That's a few more tackles that could be made by grabbing the jersey.
Just like several years ago, they wouldn't let you wear the dark visors anymore.
Yeah.
Because if you're a defender and you're looking at the guy's eyes, you can't see his eyes.
Right.
Right? So those were all advantages for offensive players, and I assume that's why those rules got changed.
I'm trying to think of the first player I saw wearing one of those. I think, like, Thomas Jones at UVA was one of the first players that Anthony Poindexter wore one, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
I think Vince Hall later on.
Vince Hall wore one, right. Yeah.
I remember Chiron Stith put one on in the middle of the 99 Miami game. You remember that?
They were poking his eyes.
They were trying to the pile, they were trying to gouge at his eyes. Yep. So he came out after halftime wearing a visor.
Yeah. Those classy Butch Davis players.
I think Vince Hall used to wear a black one, and Marcus Vick wore a black visor for a while.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. With his one orange sleeve.
He was a trendsetter. Oh, I was in the Atlanta airport a couple weeks ago coming back from Chicago, and I thought I saw Marcus ahead of me.
Oh,
and, like, I'm doing this really weird, creepy thing where I'm walking circles around him trying to, like, get... Cause they're, like,
and
from,
they
yeah, it's like, is that him? And, like, I'm trying to, like, duck under people and look, and, like, from behind it looked exactly like Marcus. So I'm texting Dwight, and I'm like, is Marcus here? Like, would Marcus be in Atlanta right now? He's like, dude, he lives in Atlanta. I was like, it's got to be him. You know, and I'm like, I get around saying it looks nothing like him. Anyway, so yeah, that stuff, the Zeke Elliott stuff, you're exactly right about. Not to mention the fact that Ohio State is still going to boast a very good defensive line.
Yes.
Really, really good defensive line.
Well, Virginia Tech has a much improved offensive line. Now, the concern there is that the center, Eric Gallo, that'll be his first start, first action at all, right?
They had 13 snaps left.
Yeah.
So, pretty much.
Look at you
action.
Pulling that off the cuff right there. Yeah. Then 13 snaps.
He's clearly researched it for a recent article.
That's pretty. 13 snaps, you know, graded out 87%, yep, yep. You know, that sort of thing.
I think probably Virginia Tech's best chance of winning that game is to play really, really good football.
You got to out-execute them.
And there you have it.
Yeah.
You need a network job. You need a network job. You could do the Sunday studio shows.
No, I'm well beyond that. That's beneath me.
It's beneath you at this point. Yeah.
My analysis is just, wow.
You need a greater challenge is what you're saying, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Needs a greater challenge. I don't think those studio shows would be that big a challenge, you know? Well, I take that back. It's challenging to hear Terry Bradshaw read a highlight.
Oh, boy.
That's challenging.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. Do you watch those shows? We're on a tangent here, but isn't it?
I don't. If I'm where someone else is watching them, I'll watch them. But I don't wake up in the morning and say, man, I can't wait to watch the pregame show with Terry Bradshaw today. So yeah, bad. But because the group Bradshaw's with, they've kind of relegated themselves to just making fun of each other the whole time.
Right.
They don't actually break down football.
Which can be humorous.
It can be.
But I can get that elsewhere, you know.
Sure.
And then when JB left, it got Kurt Menefee now, who I don't dislike, but James Brown is one of the best.
He was top notch.
Best studio guys in all of the business. Because it just seemed, again, a tangent, but he filled in on the CBS Evening News for a week.
Did he really?
And he was awesome.
Yeah.
So good. And, of course, he did studio for the Floyd Mayweather Manny Pacquiao fight.
Okay.
And, I mean, there's nothing the guy can't do. So when Brown left, I just, you know, Menefee's okay, but, you know, Brown carried those guys. Because,
sure.
Like you said, it's a bunch of knuckleheads making fun of each other. You know, and they tried this different thing where you got Bradshaw or Howie Long reading highlights. Don't do that. They can't do that. You know, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
So, the studio shows, I bring it up because I remember reading a piece a while back about how they're just these studio shows are not doing nearly as well as they used to.
It's like a frat party with old men.
It is. That's exactly what it is. You know, they're throwing more and more money at ex-players to come in and try to, you know, who's got the most star-studded cast.
Right.
But they're awful. The best parts of those shows are when Kimmel comes on, you know, and does like a segment, or when you know what I'm talking about.
See, I can't speak to the NFL stuff, because I don't watch that. But I watch ESPN's college stuff, and they're
revamping that.
Yes, and
big time.
And we'll have to go over that here in a second. But
let's do that. Hold on to that. Let's go to break. And we'll come back. I want to talk about that because I'm glad you brought it up, because I think the changing face of college football coverage in the media this coming fall is going to be interesting to talk about. Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, TechSideline.com here in the McAdoo Studios. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.